Had he more time, Richard might have come up with a better plan that would have chipped away at the enemy's numbers first. But there was no time. It had to be now. Richard stood before the men, hoping to give them something to help them carry the day. He had trouble thinking of anything but finding Kaylin. In order to have the best chance to save her, he put her from his mind and focused on the task at hand. "I had hoped we wouldn't have to do it this way," he said. "I had hoped we could do it in some manner like we've done before with the fire or the poisoning, so that none of you would be hurt. We don't have that option. Nicholas knows we're here. If we run, his men will come after us. Some of us might escape for a while."
"We are finished running," Anson said.
"That's right," Owen agreed. "We have learned that running and hiding only brings greater suffering."
Richard nodded.
"I agree, but you must understand that some of us are probably going to die today. Maybe most of us, maybe all of us. If any of you choose not to fight, then we must know now. Once we go in, we'll all be depending on each other."
He clasped his hands behind his back as he paced slowly before them. It was hard to make out their faces in the dim light. Richard knew, too, that his time was running out. His sight would only get worse. His dizziness would only get worse. He knew he was never going to get better. If he was to have a chance to get Kaylin away from the men of the Order, it had to be at once, with these men or without them. When none of them said they wanted to quit, Richard went on. "We need to get to their commanders for two reasons. To find out where the Mother Confessor is being held, and to eliminate them so they can't direct their soldiers against us. You all have weapons now, and in the limited time we've had, we've done our best to teach you how to use them. There's one other thing you must know. You will be afraid, so will I. To overcome this fear, you must use your anger."
"Anger?" one of the men asked.
"How can we bring forth anger when we're afraid? These men have raped your wives, your sisters, your mothers, daughters, aunts, cousins, and neighbors," Richard said as he paced. "Think about that when you look into the enemy's eyes as they come at you. They have taken most of the women away. You all know why. They have tortured children to make you give up. Think about the terror of your children as they screamed in fear and pain, dying bloody and alone after being mutilated by these men." The heat of Richard's anger seeped into his words. "Think about that when you see their confident grins as they come at you. These men have tortured people you loved, people who never did anything against them. Think about that as these men come at you with their blood-stained hands. These men have sent many of your people away to be used as slaves. Many more of your people have been murdered by these men. Think about that when they come to murder you, too. This is not about a difference of opinion or a disagreement. There can be no debate or uncertainty about this among moral men. This is about rape, torture, murder." Richard turned and faced the men. "Think about that when you face these beasts." He tapped a fist to his chest as he ground his teeth. "And when you face these men, men who have done all these things to you and your loved ones, face them with hate in your hearts. Fight them with hate in your hearts. Kill them with hate in your hearts. They deserve no better." The woods were silent as the men considered his chilling words. Richard knew that he had rage enough and hate enough to be eager to get at the men of the Imperial Order. He didn't know where Kaylin was, but he intended to find out and to have her back. She had done as she had in order to get the antidote to save his life. He understood what she had done and couldn't fault her for it. That was the kind of woman she was. She loved him just as fiercely as he loved her. She had done what she had to do. But he was not going to let her down. She was depending on him to come for her. The terrible irony was that it had all been for nothing. The antidote she had made such a sacrifice to obtain was no antidote at all. Richard looked out at all their faces, so intent on what he had to tell them on the eve of such a momentous battle, and remembered then the words on the statue at the entrance to this land, the words of the wizard's eighth rule, Talga Vasternish. "There is one last thing to tell you," he said, "the most important thing of all.
Richard faced them as the leader of the Dharan Empire, an empire struggling to survive, to be free, and told them those two words in their language, deserve victory. It was just turning light as they charged into the city. Only one of them had remained behind, Jensen. Richard had forbidden her from joining the fight. Besides being young and not nearly as strong as the men they would come up against, she would only create a tempting target. Rape was a sacred weapon of the wicked, and one this enemy used religiously. The men of the order would rally for such a prize. Kara was different. She was a trained warrior, and more lethal than any of them except Richard. Jensen hadn't been pleased to be left behind, but she had understood Richard's reasons, and hadn't wanted to give him anything else to worry about. She and Betty had remained behind in the woods. A man they had sent out to scout, because he knew the area well, emerged from a side alley. As they reached him, they all moved up against the wall, trying to remain out of sight as best they could. "I found them," the scout said, trying to catch his breath. He pointed to the right of their route into the city. "How many?" Richard asked. "I think it must be their main force within the city, Lord Rawl. It's where they sleep. They seem to still be there as you expected, and not yet up. The place they've taken over contains buildings for city offices and administration. But I bring troubling news as well. They are being protected by the people of the city." Richard ran his fingers back through his hair. He had to concentrate to keep from coughing. He gripped the window frame of the building beside him to help himself stand. "What do you mean they are being protected?" "There are crowds of people from the city surrounding the place occupied by the soldiers. The people are there to protect the soldiers from us. They are there to stop us from attacking." Richard let out an angry breath. "All right." He turned back to the worried, expectant faces of all the men. "Now listen to me. We are joined in a battle against evil. If anyone sides with evil, if they protect evil men, then they are serving to perpetuate evil." One of the men looked unsure. "Are you saying that if they try to stop us, we might have to use force against them?" "What is it these people seek to accomplish? What is their goal? They want to prevent us from eliminating the Imperial Order. Because they hate life, they despise freedom more than slavery." With grim determination, Richard met the men's gazes. "I'm saying that anyone who protects the enemy and seeks to keep them in power for whatever reason has sided with them. It's no more complicated than that. If they try to protect the enemy or hamper us from doing as we must, kill them."
"But they aren't armed," a man said.
Richard's anger flared. "They are armed. Armed with evil ideas that seek to enslave the world. If they succeed, you die. Saving the lives of innocent people and your loved ones, and having far less loss of life in the end, is best served by crushing the enemy as decisively and quickly as possible. Then there will be peace. If these people try to prevent that, then they are in effect siding with those who torture and murder. They help them to live another day to murder again. Such people must not be treated any differently than what they in truth are, servants of evil. If they try to stop you, kill them." There was a moment of silence. Then Anson put a fist to his heart.
"With hate in my heart, vengeance without mercy."
Looks of iron determination spread back through the men. They all put fists to their hearts in salute and took up the pledge. "Vengeance without mercy." Richard clapped Anson on the side of the shoulder. "Let's go." They raced out from the long shadows of the buildings and poured around the corner. The people off at the end of the street all turned when they spotted Richard's force coming. More people, men and women from the city, surged into the street in front of the compound of buildings the soldiers had taken up as barracks and a command post. The people looked like a scraggly lot.
"No war! No war! No war!"
the people shouted as Richard led the men up the street at a dead run.
"Out of the way!"
Richard yelled as he closed the distance. This was no time for subtlety or discussions. The success of their attack depended in large part on speed.
"Get out of the way! This is your only warning! Get out of the way or die!"
"Stop the hate! Stop the hate!"
the people chanted as they locked arms. They had no idea how much hate was raging through Richard.
He drew the sword of truth. The wrath of its magic didn't come out with it, but he had enough of his own. He slowed to a trot. "Move!" Richard called as he bore down on the people. A plump, curly-haired woman took a step out from the others. Her face was red with anger as she screamed, "Stop the hate! No war! Stop the hate! No war! Move or die!" Richard yelled as he picked up speed. The red-faced woman shook her fleshy fist at Richard and his men, leading an angry chant, "Murderers! Murderers! Murderers!" On his way past her, gritting his teeth as he screamed with the fury of the attack begun, Richard took a powerful swing, lopping off the woman's head and upraised arm. Strings of blood and gore splashed across the faces behind her, even as some still chanted their empty words. The head and loose arm tumbled through the crowd. A man made the mistake of reaching for Richard's weapon and took the full weight of a charging thrust. Men behind Richard hit the line of evil's guardians with unrestrained violence. People armed only with their hatred for moral clarity fell bloodied, terribly injured, and dead. The line of people collapsed before the merciless charge. Some of the people, screaming their contempt, used their fists to attack Richard's men. They were met with swift and deadly steel. At the realization that their defense of the Imperial Order's brutality would actually result in consequences to themselves, the crowd began scattering in fright, screaming curses back at Richard and his men. Richard's army did not pause as they tore through the ring of protectors, now on the run, but continued on to the maze of buildings among grassy open spaces dotted with trees. The soldiers who were outside began to realize that this time they would have to protect themselves, that the people of the city could no longer do it for them. These were men used to slaughtering defenseless, docile victims. For more than a year of occupation, they had not had to fight. Richard was the first on them, taking down men on his way into their midst. Kara charged in at his right, Tom at his left, the deadly point of a spear driving into soldiers, only now pulling free their weapons. These were men used to overwhelming their cowering opponents with sheer numbers, not with fighting resolute opposition. They did so now, and for their lives. Richard moved through them as if they were statues. They thrust a blade at where he had been while he cut where they were going, and met them there with razor-sharp steel. He came up behind others as they looked both ways, losing track of him, only to have him reach around and draw his sword across their throats. Others he beheaded before they realized he was about to strike. He wasted no effort with exaggerated movements and wild slashes. He cut with deadly proficiency. He didn't try to best men to show them he was better. He simply killed them. He didn't give them any chance to fight back. He cut them down before they could. Now that he was committed to the fight, he was committed to the dance with death, which meant one thing, cut. It was his duty, his purpose, his hunger to cut the enemy down quickly, resolutely, and utterly. They were not prepared for this level of violence unleashed. As his men fell on the soldiers, a great cry rose up. As men fell, their screams filled the morning. Seeing a man who looked like an officer, Richard wheeled around him and laid his blade across the man's throat. "Where is Nicholas and the Mother Confessor?" The man answered by trying to grab Richard's arm. He wasn't nearly quick enough. Richard pulled his sword across the man's throat, nearly severing his head as he spun to a man coming at him from behind. The man skidded to a stop in an effort to avoid Richard's blade, only to be stabbed through the heart. The battle raged on, moving back between the buildings as they took down those men who met the attack. Yet more men, layered in leather, mail, hides, and weapons belts, came out of the barracks at hearing the clash. They were fierce-looking men, looking better suited to murder than any man Richard had ever seen. As they came onward, Richard seized anyone who looked like an officer. None of them were able to give him an answer. None of them knew the whereabouts of either Nicholas or Kalin. Richard had to fight off the dizziness as well as the soldiers. By focusing on the dance with death and the precepts the sword had taught him in the past, he was able to surmount the effects of the poison.
He knew that such efforts couldn't long replace the required strength of endurance, but for the moment he was able to do as he had to. It was somewhat surprising to see how well his men were doing. They helped each other as they moved deeper into the enemy lines. By fighting in that way, using one another's strengths, they were often able to survive together where one alone would not have. Some of his men had not survived. Richard saw several lying dead. But the surprised enemy was being slaughtered. The Imperial Order soldiers were not charged with righteous, resolute determination. Richard's men were. The Order soldiers were little more than a gang of thugs allowed to run loose. They now faced men calling them to account. The men of the Order fought a disorderly attempt to spare their own individual lives without thought to a coordinated defense, while Richard's men fought to a singular purpose of exterminating the enemy's entire force. Richard heard Kara calling urgently for him from the narrow space between two buildings. At first, he thought she was in trouble, but when he rounded the corner, he saw then that she had a husky man on his knees. She held his head up by a fistful of his greasy black hair. One ear displayed a row of silver rings. Kara had her Aegil at his throat. Blood ran down his chin. "Tell him," she yelled at the man when Richard ran up.
"I don't know where they are."
In a fit of fury, Kara slammed the tip of her Aegil to the base of the man's skull. He flinched, his arms shaking with the shattering shock of pain that brought a gasp rather than a scream. His eyes rolled back in his head. Holding him by his tangled hair, Kara bent him back over her knee to hold him upright.
"Tell him," she growled. "They left," he mumbled. "Nicholas left last night. They carried a woman away with them, but I don't know who she was."
Richard went to a knee and grabbed the man's shirt.
"What did she look like?"
The man's eyes were still rolling.
"Long hair."
"Where did they go?"
"Don't know. Gone. In a hurry."
"What did Nicholas tell you before he left?" The man's eyes slowly came into focus.
"Nicholas knew you were going to attack at dawn. He told me the route you would take into the city."
Richard could hardly believe what he was hearing. How could he possibly know that? He hesitated. The sight of Kara's Aegil made him talk.
"I don't know. Before he left, Nicholas told me how many men you had, told me when you would attack and by which route. He told me to get people from the city to shield us from your attack. We gathered our most fanatical supporters and told them that you were coming to murder us, that you wanted to make war."
"When did Nicholas leave? Where did he take this woman?" Blood dripped from the man's chin.
"I don't know. They just left in a hurry last night, that's all I know."
"If you knew we were coming, why didn't you make a better defense?"
"Oh, but we did. Nicholas told me to take care of the city. I assured him that such a small force as yours cannot possibly defeat us."
Something was terribly wrong.
"Why not?"
For the first time, the man smiled.
"Because you don't know how many men we really have. Once I knew where your attack was coming, I was able to call in all my forces."
The man's smile widened.
"Do you hear that horn in the distance? Here they come."
A belly laugh rolled up.
"You are about to die."
Richard gritted his teeth. "You first." With a mighty thrust, he ran his sword through the officer's heart. The man's eyes widened in shock. Richard gave the blade a twist as he withdrew it, to be sure the job was done. "We'd better get the men out of here," Richard said as he took Kara's arm and ran for the corner of the buildings.
"Looks like we're too late," she said, when they came out from behind cover and saw the legions of men pouring in all around them.
How did Nicholas know when and where they were going to attack? There had been no one around, no races, not so much as a mouse had been there when they had made their plans as they moved through the countryside. How could he have known?
"Dear spirits," Kara said, "I didn't think they had this many men in Bandakar."
The roar of the soldiers was deafening as they charged in. Richard was already spent. Each deep breath he pulled was agonizingly painful. He knew that there was no choice. He had to find a way to get to Kaelin. He had to hold out at least that long.
Richard whistled in a signal to gather his men. As Anson and Owen ran up, Richard looked around and saw most of the others.
"We have to try to break out of here. There's too many of them. Stay together. We're going to try to punch through. If we make it, scatter and try to make it back to the forest."
With Kara at one side, Tom at the other, Richard charged at the head of his men toward the enemy lines. Thousands of the Imperial Order soldiers poured out from the city around them and into the open. It was a frightening sight. There were so many that it almost seemed as if the ground itself were moving. Before Richard reached the soldiers, the morning suddenly lit with blinding blasts of fire. Thunderous eruptions of flame tore through the enemy lines, killing men by the hundreds. Sod, trees, and men were hurled into the air. Men, their clothes, hair, and flesh burning, tumbled across the ground. Richard heard a howl coming from behind. It sounded somehow familiar. He turned just in time to see a roiling ball of liquid yellow flame wailing through the air toward them. It expanded as it came, tumbling with seething, deadly intensity. Wizard's fire! The incandescent, white-hot inferno roared by just overhead. Once past Richard and his men, it descended, crashing down among the enemy soldiers, spilling a flood of liquid death out among them. Wizard's fire stuck to what it touched, burning with ferocious intensity. A single droplet of it would burn down through a man's leg to the bone. It was horrifyingly deadly. It was said to be so excruciatingly painful that those who lived longed only for death. The question was, who was it coming from? To the other side, men of the Order fell as something scythed through their ranks. It almost looked as if a single blade cut them down by the hundreds, ripping them apart with bloody ferocity. But who was doing it? There was no time to stand around and wonder. Richard and his men had to turn to meet the soldiers who made it through the devastating conjuring. Now that their numbers had been so thinned, the Imperial Order soldiers were unable to mount an effective attack. Their charge fell apart on the blades of Richard's men. As they fought, more deadly fire came in to catch those trying to run or those who massed to attack. In other places, Order soldiers fell without Richard or his men touching them. They gasped in great agony, clutching their chests, and fell dead. Before long, the morning fell silent but for the groans of the wounded. Richard's men rallied around him, unsure of what had happened, worried that whatever had befallen these men might suddenly turn and befall them as well. Richard realized that they didn't see the attack of wizard's fire and magic in the same way as he did. To them, it must seem a miracle of salvation. Richard spotted two people beside one of the buildings off to the side of the grounds. One was taller than the other. He squinted, trying to make them out. But he just couldn't see who they were. With a hand on Tom's shoulder for support, they headed toward the two figures.
"Richard, my boy," Nathan said when Richard made it over to him. "So good to find you well."
Anne, a squat woman in a plain gray dress, smiled that knowing smile of hers, so filled with joy, satisfaction, and at the same time a kind of knowing tolerance.
"I doubt you two could imagine how glad I am to see you," Richard said, still catching his breath, trying not to breathe too deeply. "But what are you doing here? How in the world did you find me?"
Nathan leaned in with a sly smile.
"Prophecy, my boy."
Nathan wore high boots and a ruffled white shirt with a vest and an elegant green velvet cape attached at his right shoulder. The prophet cut quite a figure. Richard saw then that Nathan was wearing an exquisite sword in a polished scabbard. It seemed to Richard rather odd for a wizard who could command wizard's fire to carry a sword. It seemed even more odd to see the man abruptly draw the weapon. Anne suddenly gasped as someone sprang from behind the building and grabbed her. It was one of the people from the city who had gathered to protect the army, a tall, slender, pinched-faced woman with a formidable scowl and a long knife.
"You are murderers!"
she cried, her straight hair whipping side to side.
"You are filled with hate!"
The ground around Anne and the woman erupted, chunks of dirt and grass flying up into the air. Anne, a sorceress, was apparently trying to fight off her attacker. The woman was unaffected. Against a pristinely ungifted person, magic wasn't working. Nathan, not far to the side of Anne, stepped in and, without ado, ran the tall woman through with his sword. The woman staggered back, his sword through her chest, her face a picture of surprise. She dropped, sliding off the red blade. Anne, free of her attacker, glanced at the dead woman. She fixed Nathan in a scowl.
Dashing indeed!
Nathan smiled at her private joke. I told you, they aren't touched by magic. Nathan, Richard said, I still don't understand.
Come here, my dear,
Nathan said, signaling off behind him. Jensen ran out from behind the building. She threw her arms around Richard.
I'm so glad you're all right, she said. I hope you aren't angry with me. Nathan showed up in the woods not long after you and the men left. I remembered seeing him before at the People's Palace in Dahara. I knew he was a Rawl, so I told him the trouble we were in. He and Anne wanted to help. We came as fast as we could.
Jensen looked expectantly up at Richard. He answered her worry with a hug. You did the right thing, he told her. You used your head for something the orders didn't anticipate. Now that the heat of battle had ended, Richard was dizzier than ever. He had to lean on Tom for support. Nathan put a shoulder under Richard's other arm. I hear you're having trouble with your gift. Maybe I can help. I don't have the time. Nicholas the Slide has Kaelin. I have to find her, or... Don't play a fool when you aren't, Nathan said. It won't take long to bring your gift into harmony. You need the help of another wizard to get it under control, like the last time I helped you. Or you won't be of any use to anyone. Come on, let's get you inside one of these places where it is quiet. Then I can take care of that much of your troubles. Nathan was tall, with white hair down to his broad shoulders. Richard wanted nothing more than to find Kaelin, but he didn't know where to look. He felt like falling into the man's arms and surrendering his destiny to him, to his experience, to his vast knowledge. Richard knew Nathan was right. He felt like crying with relief that help was finally at hand. Who better to help him get his gift back under control than a wizard? Richard had never even dared to hope to have this opportunity. He had planned on trying to get to Nikki, because she was the only one he could think of who might know what to do. This was infinitely better than a sorceress helping him. A wizard was the only one really meant to help with this kind of trouble with another wizard's gift. Just make it quick, he told Nathan. Nathan smiled that Rawl smile of his. Come on, then. We'll have your gift back to right in no time at all.
Thank you, Nathan,
Richard mumbled as he let the big man help him through a nearby doorway. Chapter 60. Richard sat cross-legged on the wood floor facing Nathan. The barren room had no furniture. Nathan said none was needed, that the floor was fine with him. Anne, not far away, sat on the floor as well. Richard was a little surprised that Nathan was allowing her to observe, but didn't question it. There was the possibility that he might want to have her help for some part of it. Everyone else waited outside. Kara wasn't happy about allowing Richard out of her sight, but Richard calmed her concern by telling her that he would feel more comfortable and able to concentrate on correcting the problem with his gift if he knew she was outside keeping an eye on everything for him. The two windows had been shuttered, allowing in only dim light and keeping out most of the noise. With his hands on his knees, the prophet pushed his back straighter and, drawing a deep breath, seemed to pull an aura of authority around himself. Nathan was the one who had first taught Richard about his gift, telling him how war wizards like Richard weren't like other wizards. Instead of tapping the core of power within themselves, they directed their intent through their feelings. It had been a difficult concept to grasp. Nathan had told Richard that his power worked through anger.
Lose yourself in my eyes, Nathan said in a quiet voice.
Richard knew he had to try to put his worry for Kaelin aside.
Trying to keep his breathing steady so as not to cough, he stared into Nathan's hooded, deep, dark azure eyes. Nathan's gaze drew him in. Richard felt as if he were falling up into the clear blue sky. His breath came in ragged pulls, and not of his own doing. He felt Nathan's commanding words more than heard them.
"Call forth the anger, Richard. Call forth the rage. Call forth the hate and fury."
Richard's head was swimming. He concentrated on calling his anger. He thought about Nicholas having Kalin, and he had no trouble summoning rage. He could feel another force within his own, as if he were drowning and someone were trying to hold his head above water. He drifted alone in a dark and still place. Time seemed to mean nothing. Time. He had to get to Kalin in time. He was her only chance. Richard opened his eyes. "Nathan, I'm sorry, but..." Nathan was drenched in sweat. Anne was sitting beside him, holding Richard's left hand, Nathan his right. Richard wondered what had happened. Richard looked from one face to the other. "What's wrong?" They both looked grim.
"We tried," Nathan whispered. "I'm sorry, but we tried."
Richard frowned. They had only just begun. "What do you mean? Why are you giving up so soon?" Nathan cast a sidelong glance at Anne.
"We've been at it for 2 hours, Richard."
"2 hours? I'm afraid there is nothing I can do, my boy." By the sound of his voice, he meant it. Richard ran his fingers back through his hair. "What are you talking about? You're the one who told me the last time when I had this problem that joining with a wizard would set it straight. You said it was a simple matter for a wizard to fix such a disharmony with the gift."
"That's the way it should be, but your gift is somehow tangled up into a knot that's strangling you."
"But you're a prophet, a wizard, and you're a sorceress. Together you both probably know more about magic than anyone who has lived in thousands of years."
"Richard, there has not been another born like you in the last 3,000 years. We don't know that much about how your particular gift works."
Anne paused to push stray strands of gray hair back into the bun at the back of her head.
"We tried, Richard. I swear to you, we both tried our best. Your gift is beyond Nathan's help, even with my ability enhancing his power. We tried everything we know, and even a few things we thought up. None of it had any effect. We cannot help you."
"So, what must I do?"
Nathan's azure eyes turned away. "Your gift is killing you, Richard. I don't know the cause, but I'm afraid that it has spiraled into a phase that is out of control and fatal."
Anne's eyes were wet.
"Richard, I'm so sorry."
Richard looked from one distraught face to the other.
"I guess it doesn't really matter," Richard said. Nathan frowned.
"What do you mean it doesn't matter?"
Richard rose up, groping for the wall to keep his balance.
"I've been poisoned. The antidote is gone. There is no cure. I'm afraid that I'm running out of time. I guess the joke is on my gift. Something else is going to get me first."
Anne stood and gripped his upper arms.
"Richard, we can't help you right now, but you can at least rest while we try to figure out..."
"No." Richard waved off her concern. "No, I can't waste what little time I have left. I have to get to Kalin."
Anne cleared her throat. "Richard, at the Palace of the Prophets, Nathan and I waited for your birth for a very long time. We worked to clear those obstacles that prophecy showed us lay in your path. The prophecies name you as central to the course of the future of the world. In fact, they say you are the only one with a chance. We need you to lead us in this battle. We don't know what is wrong with your gift, but we can work on it. You must be here so that if we come up with a solution, we can set your power right."
"I'll not live for you to cure me, don't you see? The poison is killing me. It has 3 states. I'm already entering the 3rd state, blindness. I'm going to die. I must use what time I have left to find Kalin. You aren't going to have me to lead you, but if I can get her away from Nicholas, you will have her to lead the struggle in my place."
You know where she is, then? Nathan asked. Richard realized that, in the state of focused, concentrated thought, as he was adrift in that quiet place while Nathan was trying to help him, it had come to him where Nicholas most likely had taken Kaylin. He had to get there while Nicholas was still there with her.
Yes, I believe I do.
Richard pulled open the door. Kara, sitting right outside, shot to her feet. Her expectant expression quickly withered when he shook his head, signaling that it hadn't worked.
We have to get going, right away. I think I know where Nicholas took Kaylin. We have to hurry.
You know? Jensen asked, holding Betty close by the rope.
Yes, we need to leave at once.
Where is she then? Jensen asked. Richard gestured.
Owen, remember how you told us about a fortified encampment the Imperial Order built when they first came to Bandekar, and they were worried about their safety?
Back near my town, Owen said. Richard nodded.
That's right. I think Nicholas took Kaylin there. It's a secure place they built to hold some of the women captive. There would be plenty of soldiers to protect him, and it's the kind of place built specifically to be defensible, so it would be much more difficult to approach than his place here in the city.
Then how will we approach it? Jensen asked.
We'll have to figure that out once we get there and see the place.
Nathan joined Richard at the door.
Anne and I will go with you. We might be able to help rescue Kaylin from the slide. While we travel, the two of us can work on a solution for untangling your gift.
Richard gripped Nathan's shoulder. There are no horses in this land. If you can run and keep up with us, you're welcome, but I can't afford to slow for you. I don't have much time, and neither does Kaylin. Nicholas will not likely hold her there long. After he pauses for rest and supplies and then leaves this land, it will be even more difficult to find him. We have no time to lose. We're going to have to travel as swiftly as possible.
Nathan's eyes turned down in disappointment.
Anne drew Richard into a brief hug.
We're far too old to keep up the speed afoot that you and these young people can. When you get her away from the slide, come back, and we'll do our best to help you. We'll work on the problem while you're getting her out of his clutches. Come back then, and we'll have a solution.
Richard knew that he would never live that long, but there was no point in saying it.
All right, what can you tell me about a slide?
Nathan drew his thumb along his jaw as he considered the question.
Slides are soul stealers. There is no defense against them. Even I would be powerless to stop them.
Richard didn't suppose that needed any explanation. Kara, Jensen, Tom, you can come with me.
What about us? Owen asked.
Anson stood close by, looking eager to be included, and nodded at Owen's suggestion. There were others as well, who had stood vigil outside the place where Nathan had tried to help Richard. They were all men who had fought hard. If he was to get Kaylin back, he would likely need some men at least.
Your help would be welcome. I think most of the men should stay here with Nathan and Anne. The people here in Houghton need to have you men explain everything to them. Help them to understand all that you've learned. They will need to make some changes to adjust to interacting with the world out there now open to them.
As Richard started away, Nathan grabbed a hold of his sleeve.
Richard, as far as I know, you have no defense against a soul stealer. But there is one thing I recall from an old tome in the vaults in the Palace of the Prophets.
I'm listening.
They somehow travel outside of their body, send their own spirit out.
Richard rubbed his fingertips across his brow as he thought about Nathan's words.
That has to be how he was watching me, tracking me. I believe he watched me through the eyes of huge birds that live here called black-tipped races.
If what you're saying is right, then maybe he leaves his body in order to do this.
Richard looked up at Nathan. How does this help me?
Nathan leaned closer, cocking his head to peer with one azure eye.
That is when they are vulnerable, when they are out of their body.
Richard lifted his sword a few inches in the scabbard to be sure it was clear.
Any idea how to catch him outside of his body?
He let the sword drop back.
Nathan straightened.
Afraid not.
Richard nodded his thanks anyway and stepped down out of the doorway.
Owen,
How far is this fortified encampment?
Back close to where the path used to go out through the boundary.
That was why Richard hadn't seen it. They had come in the ancient route, used by Kajarang. Ordinarily, it would be a journey of well over a week. They didn't have nearly that long. He took in all the faces watching him.
Nicholas has quite a head start on us, and he will be in a hurry to escape with his prize. If we travel swiftly and don't stop long to rest, there's a good chance we can still catch up with him by the time he reaches their encampment. We need to be on our way at once.
We're only waiting for you, Lord Rawl, Kara said.
So was Kaelin.
Chapter 61. Each day of hard travel, Richard's condition worsened, but his fear for Kaelin drove him relentlessly onward. Most of the time, hour after hour, through sunlight, darkness, and occasional rain, they ran at a steady lope. Richard used a staff he'd cut himself to help keep his balance. When he thought he would be unable to go on, Richard deliberately picked up the pace to remind himself that he could not give up. They stopped at night only long enough to get a few hours' sleep. The men had trouble keeping up with him. Kara and Jensen didn't. They were both used to strenuous exertion in the course of difficult journeys. All of them, though, were so exhausted from the unrelenting pace that they talked only when necessary. Richard drove himself doggedly, trying not to think about his own hopeless condition. It didn't matter. He reminded himself that with every step they ran, if it was fast enough, they were gaining on Nicholas, and just that much closer to Kaelin. In moments of despair, Richard told himself that Kaelin had to be alive, that Nicholas could have killed her long ago if that was his intention. He wouldn't have run if she were dead. Kaelin would be much more valuable to him alive. In a way, he felt an odd kind of relief. He could push as hard as he needed. He didn't have to worry about his health. There was no antidote to the poison. Given the time, it would kill him. There was no solution to the problem with his gift being out of control. That, too, would kill him. There was nothing Richard could do about either. He was going to die. The wooded hills were easy enough traveling. They were open, with broad green meadows sprinkled with wildflowers and a patchwork of grassland. Wildlife was abundant. Were he not dying in pain and sick with worry for Kaelin, Richard might have enjoyed the beauty of the land. Now it was just an obstacle. The sun in his eyes was slipping down behind the towering mountains. Soon darkness would be upon them. A little earlier, Richard had used his bow to take a buck when the opportunity presented itself. Tom had made quick work of butchering it. The rest of them needed to eat, or they would not be able to keep up the pace. Richard supposed that they would have to stop for a while to cook the meat and get some sleep. Owen came up beside Richard as they trotted through a sea of grass rolling beneath the breeze. Owen pointed ahead. "There, Lord Rawl, that stream coming out of the hills is getting close to the Order's encampment. Just a little farther, over that line of hills and toward the mountains." He pointed to the right. "Off that way, not far, is my town of Witherton." Richard changed his course a little to the left, heading for the woods that started at the foot of a gentle rise. They made the trees just as the orange disk of the sun slipped behind the snow-capped mountains. "All right," Richard said, coming to a breathless halt as they entered a small clearing. "Let's set up camp here. Jensen, Tom, why don't you two and the men stay here? Get some meat cooking while I go with Owen and Kara to scout this fortification and see if I can figure out how we're going to get in." When Richard started out using his staff to help balance, Betty started following him. Jensen snatched Betty's rope.
"Oh, no, you don't," Jensen said. "You're staying here. Richard doesn't need you tagging along to attract attention at the worst possible time."
"What should we make for you to eat, Lord Rawl?" Tom asked. Richard couldn't stand the thought of eating meat. After all the bloody fighting, he needed to balance his gift more than ever. His gift was killing him, but if he did the wrong thing, it might hasten the end, and then he might not last long enough to get Kaelin away from Nicholas. "Whatever we have that isn't meat. You have time before we come back, so you could cook some bannock, some rice, and maybe some beans."
Tom agreed to take care of it, and Richard followed after Owen. Kara, looking more unhappy than he could ever remember seeing her, put a hand on his shoulder. "How are you holding up, Lord Rawl?" He dared not tell her how much pain he was in from the gift, or that he had started to cough up blood. "I'm all right for now." By the time they dragged back into their camp, almost 2 hours later, the meat on the spit was finished cooking and some of the men had already eaten. They were just curling up in blankets to get some sleep. Richard was beyond being tired. He was certain that they had been close to Kaelin. It had been agonizing to have to return, to leave the place where Nicholas held her, but he had to use his head. Wild, irrational action would bring only failure. It would not get Kaelin out of there. Richard was being driven by needs beyond food or sleep, but as he watched Owen sit heavily near the fire, he knew that Owen and Kara were exhausted, and he imagined that they had to be hungry. Rather than sit, Kara waited at his side. She would not allow him to get far from her watchful protection, nor would she voice any concern for herself or her needs. He could never have imagined, back in the beginning, ever feeling this close to a Mord Sith. Jensen stood up and rushed to meet him.
"Richard! Here, let me help you. Come and sit."
Richard flopped down on the grass near the fire. Betty came over and begged a place beside him. He let her lie down.
"Well?" Tom asked. "What do you think of the place?"
"I don't know. It has well-made timber walls with trenches dug before them. There are snares and traps all around the place. It has a gate, a real gate." Richard sighed as he rubbed his eyes. His sight was getting blurry. It was getting more difficult all the time to see things. "I haven't quite figured it out yet." It was hard to think, with the smell of the cooking meat. It was making him sick. Richard took a piece of bannock and the bowl of rice and beans Jensen handed him. He couldn't eat watching them eat the meat, or worse, smelling it. Richard stood. "I'm going to go for a walk." He didn't want to make them feel bad about their dinner or feel guilty for eating meat in front of him. "I need some time alone to think it out." In truth, he just wanted to get away from the sight and aroma of cooking meat. Even Owen was ravenously tearing into it. Richard gestured for Kara to sit back down and stay where she was. "Get some dinner," he told her. "I need you to stay strong." Richard walked off through the trees, listening to the chirp of crickets, watching the stars through the canopy of leaves. It was a relief to be alone, not to have people asking him anything. It was tiring to have people always depending on him. Richard found a quiet place where an old oak had fallen. He sat and leaned back against the trunk. He wished he never had to get up. If not for Kaelin, he wouldn't. Betty showed up. She stood before him, looking at him intently, as if to ask what they were going to do next. When Richard said nothing, Betty lay down in front of him. It occurred to him that maybe Betty just wanted to offer him some comfort. Richard felt a tear run down his cheek. Everything was falling to pieces. He couldn't hold those pieces together any longer. He could hardly breathe past the lump in his throat. He lay down and put an arm over Betty. "What am I going to do?" he sniffled. He wiped the back of his hand across his nose. "Kaelin, what am I going to do?" he whispered in forlorn misery. "I need you so much. What am I going to do?" He was at the end of all hope. He had thought, when he'd seen Nathan unexpectedly arrive, that help was at hand. The bright ember of that last hope had been extinguished. Not even a powerful wizard could help him. Powerful wizard. Kaja Rang. Richard froze. The words sent to him by Kaja Rang, those two words emblazoned across the granite base of that statue, echoed through his mind. Those two words were meant for Richard. Talga Vasternish. Deserve victory. "Dear spirits," Richard whispered. He understood. Chapter 62.
Nicholas watched as Lord Rawl made his way back into the camp among his men after his despairing whispered last prayer to the dear spirits. So sad. So very sad that the man was going to die. He would soon be with his dear spirits in the Keeper's realm of the underworld. Nicholas relished the game. The poor Lord Rawl was so lost and confused. Nicholas wished the game could continue for a good long time, but Lord Rawl had little time left. So sad. But it would be much more fun after Lord Rawl died, after that last detail was finally finished. Jagang thought this pathetic man was resourceful. "Don't underestimate him," Jagang had warned. Perhaps Jagang was no match for the great Richard Rawl, but Nicholas the Slide was. His spirit swelled with delight at the expectant thought of Lord Rawl's death. That was going to be something to watch. It would be a grand finale of the play of life. Nicholas intended to see it all, to see every sad moment of the last act. He imagined that Lord Rawl's friends would gather to weep and wail as they stood by helpless, watching him slip into the welcoming embrace of death, eternity's shepherd, come to help him begin the magnificent, never-ending spiritual journey away from the bitter interlude that had been life. The final curtain was about to draw closed. Nicholas so loved sad endings. He could hardly wait to watch it played out. Hate to live, live to hate. Nicholas wondered too, as did Lord Rawl, what would get him first, the poison or his gift? It seemed to tug first toward one, and then toward the other. For a time, the headaches inflicted by his gift nearly put him down. Then the poison would tighten its pain and make him gasp in agony. It was a fascinating question, one that, as in any good play, would not be answered until the very end. The tension was delicious. Nicholas was rooting for the gift to win the fatal contest. Poison was all well and good, but what a vastly more intriguing twist of fate it would be to see a wizard of Lord Rawl's ability and potential, a wizard unlike any to be born since an era long buried in the dunghill of mankind's history, succumb to his birthright, to his own vast but vain power, another victim of men reaching too high in life. That would be a fascinating and fitting end. Not long to wait. Not long at all. Nicholas watched, not wanting to miss a single delectable detail. With the spirit of Richard Rawl's lovely bride beside him, as it were, Nicholas felt almost a part of the family as he attended the approach of such a great man's tragic end. Nicholas felt it only fair that the mother confessor should get to see it all played out, see the sad end to her beloved. As she watched along with Nicholas, she was suffering, seeing the agony of it as Richard Rawl walked back into his camp. Nicholas savored her suffering. He had not yet begun to make her suffer. He would soon have a very long time with her to explore her capacity for suffering. The people there in the woods around the campfire looked up, curious as their master returned among them. They all waited, with Nicholas, watching, with Nicholas, as their Lord Rawl stood over them. His figure wavered in the fire, as it did in Nicholas's vision. It was almost as if he were already but a spirit, about to drift away into the glorious oblivion of the dead. "I've figured it out," Lord Rawl told them. "I know how to attack the fortification." Nicholas's ears pricked up. What was this? "At first light we go in," Lord Rawl said, "just as the sun breaks over the mountains. Right then, on the east side, we'll come in over the wall. The guards won't be able to see well because the sun will be in their eyes when they look in that direction. Men don't look where it's troublesome to look." "I like it," one of the other men said. "So we will sneak in then, rather than try to attack?" another said. "Oh no, there will be an attack,"
Lord Rawl said. A big attack, an attack that will set their heads to spinning.
What was this? What was this?
Nicholas watched, watched, watched. This was most curious. First Lord Rawl was going to sneak over the wall, and then he would have his men attack. How was he going to set their heads to spinning? Nicholas was fascinated. He moved in a little closer, fearing to miss a precious word. The attack will involve all the rest of you men, Lord Rawl said. You will all come in toward the gate at first light. While you're attacking through the gate and drawing their attention, I will be slipping over the wall. While you will be there to distract them in part, you will play an even more vital role that they will never expect. The game was afoot. Nicholas was in rapture as he listened, as he watched. He so liked the game, especially when he knew all the rules and could bend them to his wishes. It was going to be a glorious day tomorrow. But Lord Rawl, the big man Tom asked, how are we going to be able to attack through the gate if it's as formidable as you say? Nicholas hadn't thought of that. How curious. A key part of Lord Rawl's plan seemed to be faulty. That's the real trick, Lord Rawl said. I've already figured it out, and you'll be amazed to hear how you're going to do it. He had already figured it out? How curious. Nicholas wanted to hear what possible solution could solve such a major hitch in Lord Rawl's plan. Lord Rawl stretched and yawned. Look, he said, I'm exhausted. I can't stand up anymore. I need to get some rest before I lay it all out for you. It's complicated, so I'd better wait until just before we leave. Wake me up 2 hours before dawn, and I'll explain the whole thing then. 2 hours before dawn, Tom repeated in confirmation of the orders. Nicholas was furious. He wanted to hear it now. He wanted to know the wonderful, fabulous, complicated plan. Lord Rawl gestured to his delicious companion, the one named Kara, and then to several of the young men. Why don't you come with me and get some sleep while the rest finish their meal? As they started away, Lord Rawl turned back. Jensen, I want you to keep Betty here with you. Make sure she stays here. I need some sleep. I don't need the smell of goat to wake me up.
Am I going with you in the morning, Richard?
The one called Jensen asked. Yes, you play an important part in the plan. Lord Rawl yawned again. I'll explain after I've slept. Don't forget, Tom. 2 hours before dawn. Tom nodded. I will wake you up myself, Lord Rawl. Nicholas would be there as well, to watch, to hear the final piece of Lord Rawl's plan. Nicholas could hardly stand to wait that long. He would be there early. He would hear every word of it. And then Nicholas would have a surprise waiting for Richard Rawl when he and his men came for a visit. Maybe neither the poison nor his gift would take Lord Rawl. Maybe Nicholas would do it himself. Her spirit a helpless prisoner of the slide, Kaelin could do nothing but watch along with him. She was unable to answer Richard's forlorn pleas, unable to cry in sorrow for him, unable to do anything. She ached to be able to hold him in her arms again, to comfort his pain, his heartache. He was near the end. She knew that. It broke her heart to see his precious life slipping away, to see his tears, to hear him cry her name in longing, to hear him say how much he needed her. She felt so cold and alone. She loathed the feeling of being adrift. She desperately wanted to be back in her body. It waited somewhere back in a lonely room in the fortified encampment. Nicholas's body waited there too. If only she could get back there. Most of all, she wished there were some way she could warn Richard that Nicholas knew his plan. Chapter 63. Nicholas lay in wait in the camp, sniffing, listening, watching, eager for the game to continue.
He had come early, fearing to miss anything. He was sure it had to be 2 hours before dawn, time for the last act of the play. It was time for the man Tom to wake Lord Rawl. It was time. Watch, watch, watch.
Where was he?
Somewhere, somewhere.
Look, look, look.
Men off through the trees stood guard over the camp. Where was Tom?
There he was.
Nicholas saw that Tom was one of the men standing vigil as others slept. Didn't want to be late. Lord Rawl's orders. He wasn't sleeping. He was awake, so he should know it was time. What was the man waiting for? His master had given him a command. Why wasn't he doing as he had been told? The woman Jensen woke and rubbed her eyes. She looked up and took appraisal of the stars and moon. It was time. She knew it was. She threw off her blanket. Nicholas followed behind as she rushed past the low glow of the smoldering embers, rushed through the stand of young trees, rushed to the big man leaning against a stump.
Tom, isn't it time to wake Richard?
Somewhere back in a distant room in the fortification where his body waited, Nicholas heard an insistent noise. He was absorbed in the task at hand in the game, so he ignored the sound. Probably Najari. The man was eager to have a chance to get at the Mother Confessor, a chance to enjoy her more feminine charms. Nicholas had told Najari that he would have his chance, but he had to wait until Nicholas returned. Nicholas didn't want the man tampering with her body while they were gone. Najari sometimes didn't know his own strength. The Mother Confessor was valuable property, and Nicholas didn't want that property damaged. Najari had proven to be a loyal man and deserved a small reward, but not until later. He would not disobey Nicholas's orders. He would be sorry if he did. Maybe it was just...
Wait.
Wait.
What was this?
Watch. 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 The man stood and put a hand reassuringly on the young woman's shoulder.
How very touching.
Yes, I guess it is about time. Let's go wake Lord Rawl.
Again the noise. Stealthy, sharp, yet soft.
Most odd. But it would have to wait. Through the woods,
hurry, watch, 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 hurry. Couldn't they move faster? Didn't they grasp the importance of the occasion? Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Betty! The Jensen woman growled, stop bumping my legs. Again there was a skulking sound back somewhere with his body, and then another, more urgent sound. This time the sound ran a sharp shiver through Nicholas's very soul. It was as deadly a sound as he had ever heard. As the Sword of Truth cleared its scabbard, the distinctive ring of steel filled the dimly lit room. With the sword came ancient magic, unhindered, unrestrained, unleashed. The sword's power instantly inundated Richard with its boundless fury, a fury that answered only to him. The force of that power flooded into every fiber of his being. It had been so long since he had truly felt it, truly felt the full magnitude of it, that for an instant Richard paused in the exaltation of the profound experience of simply holding such a singular weapon. His own righteous wrath had already slipped its bounds. Joined now with the pure rage of the Sword of Truth, both spiraled through him like twin storms rampaging unchecked. Richard gloried that they could, and at being the ultimate master of both. The Seeker of Truth willed both storms ever onward. Even as the sword began its fearful journey, the merciless lightning of those thunderheads about to strike. The tip of the blade whistled through the night air, still 2 hours before dawn. Hesitant and uncertain, Nicholas watched as the man Tom and the Jensen woman moved through the woods to awake their dying Lord Rawl.
Somewhere back in a distant room in the fortification where his body waited, Nicholas heard a scream. It was not a scream of fear, but a riotous cry of unbridled rage. It sent a shiver through his soul. With sudden alarm, knowing that it could not be ignored, Nicholas slammed back into his body where it sat on the floor, waiting for him. Unsteady from the abrupt return, Nicholas blinked as he opened his eyes. Lord Rawl himself stood before him, feet spread, both hands gripping his sword. It was a picture of sheer muscular force, focused by terrifying resolve. Nicholas's eyes went wide at seeing the gleaming blade arcing through the still air. Lord Rawl was in the midst of a scream of startling power and rage. Every bit of his might was committed to the swing of his sword. Nicholas had a sudden and completely unexpected realization. He didn't want to die. He very much wanted to live. As much as he hated life, he realized now that he wanted to hold on to it. He had to act. He summoned his power, rallied his will. He had to stop this avenging soul before him. He reached out with his power to seize this other's spirit. He felt the horrifying shock of a staggering blow against the side of his neck. Richard was still screaming as his sword, with every ounce of power and speed he could put behind it, swept around, just clearing the top of Nicholas's left shoulder. Richard saw every detail as the blade tore through flesh and bone, turning muscle, tendon, arteries, and windpipe inside out, following with precision the path to which the seeker had justly committed it. Richard had dedicated everything to the swift journey of his sword. Now he watched as that journey reached its destination, as the blade cleared the neck of Nicholas the Slide, as the man's head, its mouth still opened in the beginning of shock not fully comprehended, his beady eyes still trying to grasp the totality of what they were seeing, lifted into the air, beginning to turn ever so slowly as the sword below it passed along its deadly arc, as curved ropes of the man's blood began tracing a long wet line across the wall behind him. Richard's scream ended as the sword's swing reached its limit. The world came crashing back around him. The head hit the floor with a loud bone-cracking thunk. It was ended. Richard recalled the rage. He had to get it under control immediately. He had something yet more important to accomplish. In one fluid motion, Richard slid the bloody blade home into its scabbard as he turned to the second body leaned up against the wall to the right. The sight of her almost overcame him. To see her there, alive, breathing, seemingly unhurt, brought a wild rush of joy. His worst fears, fears he would not even allow into his conscious mind, evaporated in an instant. But then he realized that she was not all right. She could not have slept through such an attack. Richard fell to his knees and took her up in his arms. She felt so light, so limp. Her face was ashen and dotted with sweat. Her eyelids were half closed. Her eyes rolled back in her head. Richard sank back within himself, seeking strength to bring back the one he loved more than life itself. He opened his soul to her. All he wanted, all he needed, as he held her to him, was for her to live, to be whole. Instinctively, in a way he did not fully understand, he let his power well up from a place deep inside his mind. He released himself into the torrent as it rushed onward. He let his love of her, his need of her, flood through their connection as he hugged her to his breast. "Come home to where you belong," he whispered to her. He let the core of his power course through her, intending it to be like a beacon to light her way. It felt as if he were searching through the dark, using the light of ability from deep within to help him. Even though he couldn't define the precise mechanism, he could consciously focus his purpose, his need, and what he wanted to accomplish. "Come home to me, Kaelin, I'm here." Kaelin gasped.
Even though she hung limp, he felt the intensity of the life in his arms. She gasped again, as if she had nearly drowned and needed air. At last, she stirred in his arms, her limbs moving, groping. She opened her eyes, blinking, and looked up. Astonished, she sank back into his arms.
"Richard, I heard you. I was so alone. Dear spirits, I was so alone. I didn't know what to do. I heard Nicholas scream. I was lost and alone. I didn't know how to get back. And then I felt you."
She embraced him tightly, as if she never wanted to let go.
"You led me back through the darkness."
Richard smiled down at her. "I'm a guide, remember?" She puzzled at him.
"How could you do that?"
Her beautiful green eyes opened expectantly.
"Richard, your gift."
"I figured out the problem with my gift. Kaja Rang had given me the solution. I'd had the solution long before that, but I never realized it. My gift is fine now, and the sword's power works again. I was being so blind that I will be ashamed to tell it all to you." Richard's breath caught, and he coughed, then, unable to hold it back any longer. Nor could he hold back, grimacing at the pain. Kaelin gripped his arms.
"The antidote. What happened to the antidote? I sent it back with Owen, didn't you get it?"
Richard shook his head as he coughed again, the pain feeling as though it ripped him deep inside. He finally regained his breath.
"Well, now that is a problem. It wasn't the antidote. It was just water with a bit of cinnamon in it."
Kaelin's face went ashen.
"But..."
She looked over at Nicholas's body, at his head lying upended at the end of a bloody trail across the floor.
"Richard, if Nicholas is dead, how are we going to get the antidote?" "There isn't any antidote. Nicholas wanted me dead. He would have destroyed the antidote long ago. He gave you a fake to be able to capture you."
Her face had gone from joy to horror.
"But without the antidote..."